This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montaigne. As it nears the end of its term, the United States Supreme Court issued some major opinions today. The decisions are long awaited and deal with the Bush administration's policy toward detainees in what it calls its war on terror. NPR's legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg joins me now from the Supreme Court. Nina, what did the court say?
Well, this was quite a morning. We were inside the court while the justices read their opinions and dissents for over a half an hour. And we had three cases. The first and most important, I think, probably to the government, was the Hamdi case. Mr. Hamdi was seized on the battlefield in Afghanistan, and then it turned out he was an American citizen, born in the United States, although he lived in the Gulf. And they transferred him to a naval brig and have held him there for over 2 years. And he challenged his detention, and his father challenged his detention for him as unconstitutional. The government claimed that because he was seized on the battlefield, basically he was not entitled to any hearing or due process before an American court, nor was he entitled to a tribunal of any sort under the Geneva Conventions because, as you know, the administration takes the view that the Geneva Conventions don't apply to people seized in Afghanistan. Today the court rejected that position by an 8-1 vote, and there were several factions on the court, and let me go through them. There was Justice O'Connor writing for four members of the court, herself, Justice Kennedy, Justice Breyer, and the Chief Justice. They sort of took the what you might call the middle ground. They said you cannot hold him without some sort of due process. And since you all you've told us is that he had a chance to say that he wasn't really an enemy combatant when you took him in for screening and when you interrogated him, and that isn't enough, said those four. He might have gotten enough due process with some sort of tribunal under the Geneva Conventions, but you say the Geneva Conventions don't apply. You can always set that up if you want. But if he goes to an American court, yes, it is true, says the court, that that the government may present affidavit evidence, as it did in this case, that says he was captured as an enemy combatant. But he has to have the right to contest that, a meaningful right. And although the court didn't say so explicitly, the suggestion is he's also entitled to a lawyer. The opinion for those four justices was joined in the result by Justices Souter and Ginsburg for the purposes of having a majority. But they said they would have let him go, Hamdi go, immediately because under the Detention Act passed by Congress in 1971 in an effort to make sure that we never had anything like the detention of the Japanese, any detention has to be authorized by statute. And those two justices said it was not authorized by statute, and therefore Hamdi would have to be released immediately unless Congress acted in some way.
Nina, I'm going to just jump in here because this is a very complicated case. And just to bring it to some very basic thing, Yasser Issam Hamdi, American born, therefore American citizen.
Right.
The ruling was, as simply as you can put it, even just in a line, that...
Well, the ruling is that they have to give him some due process. It's not clear whether it'll be in a military tribunal system that the government sets up. More likely, it'll go back. It's going to go back to the courts that it came up through. And if you remember, initially, Hamdi's lawyer, who's a public defender, went into court, and the district court judge said... to the government, you give me this affidavit from somebody named Michael Mobbs that says this guy is an enemy combatant. And I have no way to test that. Mr. Mobbs isn't here. Mr. Mobbs admittedly never met Mr. Hamdi. He's basing everything on what he saw in Afghanistan. That's not enough for me. Well, the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals said that was enough. And now today the Supreme Court says it is not enough. You can't keep him in detention for years without a lawyer, without due process. And there are eight justices who in one form or another are saying that. Then there also is the case of Padilla, who was seized here on American soil, Jose Padilla, And he is a former Chicago gang member who the government alleges was part of a dirty bomb plot. And again, the case came up to the court. In this case, the court, by a 5-4 vote, avoided a decision and said, you didn't bring this case in the right court. And you need to go back to a different court. You brought it in New York. You should have brought it where he was finally imprisoned, in South Carolina.
Now, you started with three different cases.
Yes, and the third case involves all the Guantanamo detainees and whether they are entitled to court jurisdiction. And that means court oversight of the terms of their detention. And the government has always claimed that they are enemy combatants and that the courts have no role in this whatsoever. And they won in the lower courts. They lost in the Supreme Court today by a 6-3 vote. So these are three cases in which the government won the right to detain people, but under a kind of court supervision they didn't want. And so this is, I think, you could argue that it's a win for the government, but I don't think so. I think the government has taken quite a hit. And when you see what the language is, for example, Justice Scalia wrote a concurring opinion, really. It's fashioned as a dissent, but he wrote that the only thing you could do with someone like Hamdi was to try him for treason. He said, in treason, you need two witnesses to his treasonable act, and you need a public trial. And he's very adamant about the fact that that is required by the Constitution, and that if we want to change terms like this, we're going to have to do it by Congress doing it, not by the courts doing it. So I think that the government really took, as I said, a fairly serious hit here today, and the terms under which it is holding people from Guantanamo to these two Americans who are being held in the naval brig in South Carolina, the terms of their detention are now seriously up for grabs.
Now, if the government took a hit in its policy, does that translate in a way to the to these detainees being, in some sense, you know, winners in this legal process?
Well, I think you'd have to say they are. They've gotten something they didn't have before, which is some semblance of due process and court oversight. And certainly with the Guantanamo detainees, they were not at all assured of a court looking into the terms of their detention and whether they have any due process rights. The Supreme Court sent it back to the lower court to do that. It's not clear what the lower court will do, but it is clear that the Supreme Court has sent some kind of a signal. And you can tell in the language of these concurring and dissenting and majority opinions that the court is troubled by the fact that here we are years after these detentions with people still in sort of a black hole. I'm just going to turn a page here. For example, here's Justice Scalia. Our federal constitution explicitly includes a provision that says you get a right to test your detention. I frankly don't know whether criminal prosecution is sufficient to meet the current emergency, but if the situation demands it, the administration can ask Congress to suspend the writ of habeas corpus, not ask us to erode a democratic system.
Nina, thanks very much. NPR's legal affairs correspondent, Nina Totenberg.